Right. Pardon me. Mrs. Jones, I'm afraid the machine is on now, so could I start with your name and address here, please?
Marion Gertrude Jones, 36 Audley Crescent, Hereford.
And could I ask about your date of birth?
27th of the 8th, 1919.
All right. And I'd like to know, because you came to Ysgogeiliog to work, how did that come about?
Well, I was working in the CWS Bank in Manchester.
In the what?
Sorry. CWS Bank in Manchester. And everybody had to be called up. And I was working on computers then, early computers, which were quite rare. Hollerith, yes. Punch cards, you know. It was really, yes. They were pioneers of it.
What date was this then?
1934, wasn't that? And as it came, the younger ones were called up first, and they went to the War Office in London, and they were getting the stripes and their thing. So when it came my turn, I was then 21. When it came my turn, I didn't fancy going into the army, and I had a friend who was a conscientious objector who was doing timber core in Cheshire. Went out to see him once, and fancied the job, so I volunteered for that. And I was called up, came to Wales on March the 23rd, 1942. And there was about 15 of us, I think, around 15, all from different parts of the country. Some were college students, you know, they were, because you had to do something. And we landed in Ysgogeiliog, where everybody spoke Welsh.
It must have been a culture shock.
It was
shock.
Traumatic. It really was. It really was traumatic. And, of course, we were a bit among the Welsh. They didn't care a lot for the English at that time. It's better now. And I went to lodge with Mrs. John Lloyd, Acker Cottage. Diller's Cottage, rather, I'm sorry. Yes, Diller's Cottage. She was... he was from Llwdy Lodge. And she was... from Era Terrace, Mrs. Pugh, her mother was. And they lived in, I've said the name where they lived, and it was just one room downstairs, no kitchen. The toilet was down below. You went down steps and it was by the river, and there were two bedrooms upstairs, one a single room, which Mr. and Mrs. Lloyd had, and the other was a double one, and there was already Eileen there. She was with the Forest Commission.
And who's Eileen?
Eileen married Elvid.
Eileen Jones.
Eileen Jones, yes, yeah, from Newtown. She was already there, so I had to get into bed with her. Well, we shared a room. we came for a month's labouring, just to break us in. And then when I'd been there, perhaps 3 or 4 months, I met a man by Aberglesic there, and he started talking to him, and he was the district officer, and he was asking me what I'd done before and all the rest. So he promoted me to the in charge, you know, of the office and that. So then I was left there on my own. The others moved on, every one of them, so I was left on my own. Edward Lloyd was the foreman. He lived in Ysgogeiliog as well. And we had the office in his house.
Oh, and where was that then?
Acker Cottage. Acker Cottages.
Acker Cottage?
Yes. You know, when you come down Cairbont, across the road, there's a row of cottage.
Yes.
Right opposite. Yeah. It's one house now.
Yeah.
Now, in there was Ike Morgan.
What was Ike doing then?
Forestry, I think. Yes, I think he was driving, I'm not sure. It was Ike Morgan. Mrs. Morris wasn't there. Who were the others there? Maggie Votte, Kenneth's mother, father.
Kenneth Rowlands's?
Yes.
Yeah, right.
And Edward Lloyd and his wife. And then the next one was empty. It belonged to Tom Rowlands's sister. She'd married somebody called Evans. I think he had quite a bit of money. And the sign over that one was Aberglesic School, 1846. Now, where that stone went to, I don't know. But that first house was Aberglesey School, 1846. And underneath it was a little tiny cottage, one up, one down, and there was a Miss somebody that was a seamstress. She did sewing.
And that was your office there then?
The office was in Edward Lloyd's, just in Edward Lloyd's house. Didn't have an office because it wasn't very big then, you see.
What was your actual job when you came and had to do labouring? What were you doing?
Well, we were on Penland below Escaluid, and somebody had felled the timber previously. And we first of all chopped the good wood off and made it into cordwood. What it went for, I don't know. And then the brash had to be burned. And that's what we were doing. And the brash had to be burned. And then each day, after you'd finished the burning, you had to bury the ashes.
Yeah.
And it came very hot. And Charlie Williams was in charge of us. Charlie Tiput. And he was in charge of us. And he saw that we buried it every day. And then there was some dispute. It was getting too dry to burn. And the powers that be said, carry on burning. Now, who made the decision? I don't know. But we carried on burning. And we went this Saturday morning and we burnt and we buried. And Charlie made sure it was buried. And then in the afternoon, the postman, John Keenus, was coming back and saw something. He must have seen a light or something. But that... it had gone underneath the ground. It was so dry. There was no water. There was the Aberglesey, which was a little stream, but it was going up. So there was nothing for that fire to do but to go along the top of the mountain. They couldn't do anything until they got down to the village. There was no water. But we shouldn't have been burning then.
No.
You know, I mean, but let's face it, we were townies. We didn't know what was what. But they had been saying it was too dry, but it just went like a tinder. All the way along. It was a wonderful sight.
And you set the whole mountain?
Yes. Now, the Langdales got the blame for it. But there's nothing we could have done. I mean, we had to burn, and we did bury it. And Charlie did decide that it was buried properly. Before we went home, he always did.
Were you involved with trying to put the fire out?
No, afterwards? Didn't go near. A lot of the people in the village went and claimed overtime for it.
Were you popular after that?
No. They blamed us for it.
They did
blame. We weren't terribly popular to start with, let's face it that way. But,
Did they get nasty or anything with you?
Well, you didn't know because they weren't speaking your language, were you?
So how did you cope with the language barrier then?
I don't really know. You got used to it. Had to know. I mean, some of them could speak English. Most of them didn't. You know, they just didn't. I mean, that was their language. I'm not complaining about that. But they just spoke well, so we just got on with it. So, quite a few. And then after that, that would be, I don't know, May or June, something like that. It was very hot weather.
In what year?
1942, not long after we went. And then we went to work after that. Over to Escaluellan, which was right in the next valley, right at the top of Cwmswr. The house was empty. There was a beer bottle in it and an old Bible. I remember that, because we used to go in the house in wet weather. But so I used to walk there. It used to take me about an hour and three quarters to walk there in the morning and back at night.
You had to walk all the way?
Well, yeah, what else could you do? I had a bicycle, but I couldn't... You know, we had to walk over there. Because when it was payday, I used to be walking 5 hours, taking it to different people, you know, paying the wages.
How many did you have on the payroll?
I wouldn't like to say, probably about 10 there. But it grew and grew as time went on. This was in the early days, but it grew and grew. And then from there, I went to work at Penagos. Now, I can't remember the name of the place. It's the first place before you come to the cottages. I can't remember the name of the place, it'll come. And worked there, and we had horses tushing timber in the woods. And they had the stables at the Red Lion in Mahanslith then, And the horses, I think it was Dan Butler, chemist, that had the horses. But some of the men that were tushing timber, they weren't actually working, they were working for Dan Butler, lived the other way. So I used to pick up a horse and ride it down to Penegas to...
Did you?
Yeah, they were all big old horses, you know. They weren't just fine things, tushing timber, no particular breed. And then we moved further down there. And then from there we went to Pennell. I should have looked at a map. I can't remember the name of the places. There are two places there. We're there a long time. That was a big project.
Up at the tops, coming over towards Pontperthog, up the top there, do you mean?
No. This was past Pennell, through Cut.
Oh, right. Okay.
There was two different farms there. I can't remember the name of the farms yet. I should have looked at the map first. And then went from there to Happy Valley. Opposite the Capel Maitland, is it, in Happy Valley? The chapel there. And in that chapel, there's a foreigner's corner. And it's all the English that were killed building the railway. And they call it Foreigner's Corner in Happy Valley. Capel Maitland, is it?
Yeah.
That's right, yeah. You were looking there. They call it then. I suppose they still do.
So you were doing forest work as you were going...
Well, what we were doing was felling the timber. What I was doing was... the men were on piecework, doing that, measuring the timber, and sending it off to places from the orders, and deciding, going into wood before it had started, and picking out ones that would make telegraph poles, because they were all timber then. Standing underneath and marking them because they were worth something. And with the acquisition office and, you know, deciding how much timber that was there before they bought it. And they had, the birch went for brush backs.
Excuse me, what do you mean brush
trees,
backs?
You know, scrubbing brushes, that sort of thing.
Oh, right, okay.
The ash went for handles, you know, handles for axes, etc. Because there were no chainsaws then, you see. The men that were felling it, the axes were 7.25 pounds, and they were doing those all day, every day. It was remarkable how they did it. And the poplar went for matchsticks, the alder went for clog backs, oak went for South Wales mining timber. The South Wales miners wouldn't have any softwood at all because the oak gave you a warning. But in the Midlands, they would have, so the softwood either went for pulpwood or it went for telegraph poles or woodwood, which was another thing for paper. But they would have the softwood props, but the South Walians wouldn't. And the sizes were 3.5 foot, 4.5 foot and 6 foot. So that must have been the height of the...
Oh, what do you mean... The oak would give you a warning.
Oak will give a creak before it gives. You imagine there was no steel or anything in the mines then. It's all timber. And then you had the big ones across the top. And then we had sawmills at the top of Treorin. And you did for there, you did chocks that were all for mining timber. But that was what the oak went mostly. And the wood, the bits, you know, would go for firewood and that sort of thing. Then we went from Happy Valley to Ynys Maengwyn. Yes, that was a big house.
Was it standing then?
The house was standing, the old lady was living in it. Whoever she was, I don't know, but she was living in the house then. And I'm just trying to think where else we went. I used to do jobs like... You see, the Board of Trade were in charge of all the timber. Now, you'd have, like, Powys Estate, things like that. They'd have their own timber fellers, and they would measure it. But I would go in to check their measurements.
Right.
It was all controlled by all timber. Even on the private estate, it was controlled then by the Board of Trade. So you had...
Well, when did you go on to the Board of Trade then?
It was Board of Trade when I went in. It was never Forest Commission. It was Board of Trade when I went in.
And that's it. why did they say Land Army Girls? And you were Land Army Girls, but with the Border Trade, was it?
Yes, yes. We were the Timber Corps. Yes, we had a different. We had a green beret, slightly different. Which reminds me, this year for the first time we walked at the cenotaph.
Did you?
Yeah, I mean, not me personally, yeah, but yeah, never been allowed to do it before. But this time for the first year, that's 1902.
You all did your bits, didn't you?
Yes.
What uniform did you have altogether?
Well,
then?
Similar to the others, it's trousers and that, but just the different beret and the different badge. I think I've got my badge here somewhere, I'm not sure. But we're much better paid than the Forest Commission. And I think that would cause a little bit of...
Do you remember how much your pay was when you...
When I went in, I think it was about £2.08. Something like that. And when I came out, it was probably about £5. But that was a man's wage then.
Well, why were you having a man's wage then?
Well, I mean, that was the average wage in Bahantla was probably less than that. But we were just better paid. I mean, we had responsibilities. There was no... I don't know. Other parts, they may have carried on labouring, I don't know. But not in W. Corris, we didn't at all. It was all... And there was nobody else there. You know, only me doing this.
Yeah, so the other women now...
They moved. They only came there for the few weeks to do the training. The same as I did. I came to Esquigilio for a few weeks to do the training. I got this job.
Esquigilio was just like a training base and...
Well, I take it that was... Well, everybody had to do a month. To get you into it. It's just the same as in the army. You had to do 6 weeks bashing, and it was sort of that sort of thing. But where they went, I don't know. Some of them come out, I don't know, but they had... Some of them were very educated young ladies. No, they weren't... there was one, a Dorothea Sargent. Her father was the head of the RAC in Liverpool. You know, they were from good families, they really were.
And all of these girls were staying somewhere in...
Oh, yes, all stayed in Esquigilio. There was only one Welsh girl came, and she stayed with Mrs. Pugh. But there was the rest of them, Liverpool, and I knew one from London, because with the Blitz, the London office had to close, and they brought it up to Manchester. So I knew her. I'd only just got to know her. But the rest were from all over the place. They were different. I'm trying to think where they did come from, but... There's one Jewish girl too.
How long were you in the area for then?
I went in March 1942, and I was demobbed in November 1946. 4 years.
So for most of these 4 years, you were in charge of men.
Well, yes. I was in charge, yes, because I was doing all the office work and everything. Yeah.
And was your office still in Edward Lloyd's?
No. I had an office in the wood.
Whereabouts?
The one in Towing, I had an office there. And we had two sawmills at the top of Treowyn, and there were offices there.
Did you have an office in Esquigilio area at all?
No, not at all. No, not at all. Once we got more and more, we had offices wherever we were. But the main one was in Mahantla, the top of Treowyn, and they built two sawmills there. And that they did all the sawing for, but it was all mining timber, you know, they weren't doing commercial stuff.
See, now stuff was chopped down and hauled out in... Esquigilio, Corris.
Yeah.
Would it all go down to Treowyn?
Well, no, a lot of it was dispatched straight from the woods. Only the stuff that was going to be used in the sawmills. The rest went straight from the woods. So it was taken by lorry to the station and loaded on trucks. And then you took your dispatch note in. You decided, you had the orders, which pit it was, where it was or anything. And then you had your form to fill in. The lorry driver would you'd tell him, you know, so-and-so for such a thing, and he'd take them down, put them in a truck, then you'd go down at night and dispatch them from the railway station. Perhaps you'd have 12, 14, 16 trucks.
So the railway station was busy
then
as well?
Oh, the railway station was tremendously busy. trucks going every day.
God, it must have been a busy place then.
Because the railway was important in Manchester then, you see, it was an area thing, yes. Oh, it was busy.
Were you still living in Escagillo?
Oh, I never changed digs. I stayed with Harriet all the time.
What did you do in the evenings?
Well, I can't really say. You had to go shopping a couple of times a week because you had your own food. Walked.
Well, they didn't cook and things for you.
They cooked for you, but you bought your own food. You just had a room and then she cooked for you.
Were you on rations then, were you?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, yes, it was ration. I first went to the shop in the village and then I went to Parsons in Corris. Got me goods there. Used to go there a couple of times a week. Bought your meat and everything up there. And then she cooked it as... although I think later on I shared a joint with her. Because, you know, buying separate meat. But you just bought your own food and it was just put to one side.
Did you have to pay lodging as well as...
You pay so much a week. I can't remember what it was. I think it was about 12 shillings a week just for your room. Which was very good. She really was. She still scrubbed my boots when I came out of the world. She really did spoil me. Yes, I had a good place there. And Eileen went, you see. I think Eileen married. So I was there on my own for a long, long time.
Well, what about entertainment?
Well, there were concerts in Corris because everything then was making money for when the boys came home.
Oh, right, yeah.
You know, because they got so much money each, those that were in the army. There were concerts. We went to Mahantlith on a Saturday to the cinema. 5 o'clock bus down and came back on about 9 o'clock. Trying to think what else we did.
The train had gone by then, had it? The Corris Railway?
Oh, no, the train hadn't gone, but it wasn't passenger then.
Oh, it just...
Oh, no, it went on till 1948.
You don't remember it coming into Escagillog?
Yes.
You do?
The goods, yes.
Well, what about to Era Works? It had gone from there then?
No, Era Works had gone, yes, yeah. Now, I think Pixton was involved in Era Works.
And who's Pixton?
The man I told you about that came to do the place up early. I think he was in for... But the enamelling, I think, was Rue Grythin, wasn't it? There was a quarry. There was a quarry at Rue Grythin on the old road below Escagillo.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the enamel works there. Now, even in my time, you could get down to Rue Grythin. It was quite dangerous, you know, the level was there. And the tips were all there, and the buildings were still there, Rue Grythin. And next to Rue Grythin Quarry, there's a wall still there, and I believe there was a house there, and that's where my father-in-law was born.
Right.
And that was in 1871. But I think as a baby he went to Caerbond. But there was a house there, and there was a quarry at Rue Grythin. And all the stones were on the other side of the road.
Right.
And also up above, on the road up to above Escagillog, there was a lake. And I've got some pictures of that lake. And apparently it was for the quarry. And in the end, somebody pulled the plug out and there was no lake anymore. But they were sailing. They used to sail on that lake. They used to go on that boats on that lake. And then, but that was part of Rue Grythin Quarry.
Right.
And the lake was there. Because for a long time I worked at Llanorin, walked over the top. Llanorin by the waterworks there. So I used to pass that lake every day. But eventually the plug was taken out and it just disappeared.
You had to walk to work or on your bike?
Or on my bike. When I was working in Happy Valley, I pedalled.
How long did it take you?
Oh, I don't know. I went to Pennell. It was very hard work, you know, on the old road to Happy Valley because it was a big climb up, wasn't it, both ways. I walked there and I must have left my bicycle in the Red Lion to get down to Penagos. But I walked over to Llanorin. That was quite a hard one. And Esgus Llewellyn was longer still, of course.
Where were the plantations in Llanorin then?
Well, they were old forests. There weren't new plantations. Mm. We weren't felling anything new. They were old forests.
Well, I suppose they were planting as fast as they could to replace...
Well, that was the commission was doing that. That was nothing to do with us.
You did nothing at all with the commission then? You kept yourselves
nothing
apart?
Nothing at all. Nothing at all to do with the commission at all. Now, when Dovey Woodlands was formed after the war, Dovey Woodlands then replanted, you know, they were managing the estates for all the people around. They did the replanting, but the Board of Trade did no replanting whatsoever. No planting, no nothing.
While you were in Ysgugeiliog, I assume you met your husband?
Yeah.
What was your single name?
Moscrop. M-O-S-C-R-O-P.
And you met your husband, and his name was?
Richard Henry Jones.
And where was he working at the time then?
I wasn't in any office in Machynlleth.
Oh, in Machynlleth?
Yes.
For the quarry?
Where Iain Owen is now. That was up to any office.
Oh, right.
You know where he has his hardware shop?
Yes, I do, yes.
Yeah, there. And there was a little cottage at the side of that. And there was a Miss Owen lived in there. And she owned Cairbond houses and that. I don't know how it came, but she owned part of Ysgugeiliog, Miss Owen. But,
Did he ever work in the forestry, your husband?
No. He went straight from town school into... he started about 1937-38. Better luck than I had. I started in 34. He was older than... But, yes, he worked there. And he worked there. Then... I got married in 1946, and we lived in Derwen Lars, just outside Derwen Lars. And I was at home, as women were then, and Dovey Woodlands was formed, and the chap that was the manager of Dovey Woodlands was a Trevor Jenkins, who used to live at Pantaig.
Yeah.
And Mr. Owen Owen, Garth Gwynin was the chairman, you know, Owen Owen. And Trevor Jenkins, Mr. Owen decided that they needed office, you know, somebody in the office then. And so Trevor Jenkins suggested me because I'd been in the business. And Mr. Owen came to see me and I went to work there for a year. And then when it grew to a great size, they offered Dick the job. So he left Aberglwenny Quarry and went to Dovey Woodlands. He was there till we came here because Dovey Woodlands was taken over and we came here. He came out forestry group.
His son is now keeping the jewellery shop. He does some jewellery and things in Machynlleth.
Who's that?
Jenkins' son.
Is he? Now, what was his name? I can't remember now. He had a son and a daughter, yes.
Kelvin.
Is that his name? Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't know that, yes. They used to live at Pantaig.
That's it,
yeah. Yes, they did.
Well, what was Ysgugeiliog like then, when you came there?
No lights in it. No street lights. dark. No council houses.
No. Was there a camp there?
The camp was there. The camp had been built in the early 30s, I think. The camp was there.
What was it used for when you came?
A Peru school. It was evacuated. Bad boys school, they called it. And Harriet, my landlady, she used to be in charge of looking after the headmaster's quarters, you know, working for him. Quite a few staff there, but I can't remember that the boys ever, you know... We never had much to do with them. Although one morning we went up to Penland to work and there was a lot of them up there, then they'd run away. They hadn't run very far, of course. But there didn't seem to be any problems with them at all.
You can't remember the name of the proved school there?
No, I can't remember the name of that. No, I think it was Wolverhampton. It was from the Midlands somewhere, but I'm not sure. I can't even remember the name of the headmaster. I should have done, because Harriet worked for him. But,
you worked for him?
No, Harriet Lloyd Harriet. Worked for him.
What was the camp built for?
Unemployed, for unemployed from Liverpool to teach them how to work, really, because most of them have never had a job. You imagine what it was like in the 20s and 30s. I mean, 3 million unemployed.
Yeah.
What was the population then? And no women working. So it was. Oh, that was all men. It was terrible. And some of them have never had a job. And that's what they came and they built that road. Now, whether they built it for the commission...
What road is this now?
The one from Ysgugeiliog, from the back of Dillas Cottage, right up to Penlan.
Right, yeah. Dillas Cottage on the bottom there.
On the bottom, yeah. There used to be the pump outside it. They used to call it a plump.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't working as a pump when I was there. They'd got a tap further down, but
How did they build that with pick and shovel?
I take it. It wouldn't be anything much then, would there?
Just these unemployed?
Just these unemployed and foremen with them, yes. Now, it wasn't that marvellous a road, but I mean, it was a road that forestry vehicles and everything used afterwards. So, but they built it.
Well, was there a tram line there then?
Yes. Yes, there was a tram line there, yeah.
And how far did that go?
I rather think that's to do with Pixton. Not very far up. I remember.
Could you...
You see, the road behind Dillis Cottage, further up the top of the village, there was a Dick Morgan lived in a bungalow there. That was the main road. This one joined onto it. I used to climb a stone to get onto the road. So actually, the road probably started higher up by Morgan's bungalow. This second thought, that's probably it.
Morgan's bungalow. Where are we talking about now?
The other side of the camp. Top of Roo.
Right, in Bryn Mawr then.
Bryn Mawr, that's right, it. That's the one, yes, yeah, yeah.
Who was this Mr. Morgan?
Well, he was, Dick Morgan, he was a son of old Isaac and a half-brother to young Isaac. Very nice man. His wife was called Emma, they had one daughter. And I rather think I'm sure they did have a forester living with them. And I'm not sure whether they didn't do the office work in his... digs. Now, I'm not sure about that, but there was a forester living there. It was a chap from Dalgethie. I don't remember his name. But he lived with the Morgans. He lodged with the Morgans.
Who was the district officer for that area at the time then?
Butters.
And where did he live?
Don't know the name of the place. Down towards Pamperthug.
Yeah. Nursery Lodge.
That's right. That's the one. Yes, Nursery Lodge. That's right. Yes. Yeah. He lived there. I never hardly saw him. I never saw Mrs. Butters. I don't know whether she ever went out of the house at all. I never saw her. She didn't seem to join in anything or anything.
He didn't interfere with your work at all?
Well, he's nothing to do with us.
What about the other holdings? Do you remember who was in?
Yes. Pantaig. That was a new bungalow.
They'd just been built then, had they?
They'd just been built then, yes. Pantaig. And there was David Jones and his wife there then. And they had a couple of forestry girls
with them. Oh, they had some as well.
Dillis, I think one was called, because most of those girls, local girls, never joined the Land Army at all. They just worked. You know, it was just a job to them. But there was two of them.
What do you mean, did they...
They didn't join the Land Army. They weren't members of the Land Army. Didn't have a uniform.
So who was paying them then?
Well, the Forestry Commission.
Oh, they were with the...
But they weren't... You know, they hadn't joined up, they just got a job in the forestry. There was two girls there, and then there was another. Then, further on, there was Tim Mawr.
Mm.
Now, that had been a full-time farm that was taken over, and there was a Davis there, I can't remember his Christian name, he had a brother at Kyabba.
Yeah.
And his wife was called Sally. And they had a lot of children. He was much, much older than her. And then he had pneumonia. They took him to Dagmar Hansleth and he died. And she had another child 8 months after he died. So, yes. And this Edna, a Lancashire girl she was, real broad Lancashire girl, she was in the Forestry Commission. She stayed with Sally quite a long time after he died. Then Sally went to live in Lower Corrie somewhere afterwards, didn't she?
Glandore.
Glandore, that's right. She had one daughter, Harriet, who married a Pakistani. That's right. And then she had, there was a Hugh and a Thomas and a John.
And a Glynn.
And a Glynn, yes, yes. I don't know which was the last one, but he was born long after his father died.
Glynn.
Yes, yeah. And then, it was a climb up to Dumartu, and they did it every day. And then after that came Escaluid.
Escaluid, yes.
And there was a Milton Davis there and his wife, Anne. Now, Milton Davis hardly ever shaved. I used to meet him. Lovely man. And I should think his wife was quite a bit older than he was. No English. And I had no Welsh. So we had lovely conversations. And they had a dresser with plates on, bigger than mine, I'm sure. And K occasionally, if it was wet weather, you know, we'd have to shelter, we'd shelter in there. And the men used to write their names on these plates with the dust from the, because it had a wood fire going all the time, you know. I mean, it wasn't that she was dirty, we'd come there all the time. But it, they were lovely, I remember that dress.
They'd let you into the house to shelter.
Oh, yes, yes. And then the next house was Penlan, well, they'd let you in there to shelter too.
What about Blaen Glesyrch? There was...
Blaen Glesyrch. Was nothing there then. It was Blaen Glesyrch was where we were felling this timber. There had been a house there, I think, originally, but it wasn't there then. There was no sign. I can't remember any sign of it. Because that's the river, the Glesyrch, isn't it?
Yeah.
That comes and joins the Dulles down at the bottom. Because that ran past my digs, that Glesyrch.
That's right, yes.
Yes, yeah. Mm. Now, Robin Penlan, I think they'd always been there as farmers, as a family. I think his father was called Morgan Jones. I don't know. They used to come to Esgeigleog Chapel. But she, his wife was from Aberlaveni. Because she used to walk, she had one day off a week and she used to walk from Penlan to Aberlaveni to see her sisters.
Well, the children from Penlan walked over the top to Aberlaveni to school.
Did they?
And from Esgeigleog.
Well, of course there was
Mrs. Lloyd, the post, you see, was Esgeigleog, yes. Auntie Mawr, and she walked over.
Yes, yes. Well, there wasn't a school in Esgeigil, you see, it was, you had to go to college. Yes, they would. She used to walk. And then after that, there was a bungalow that had been built. Caivelin, I think it was called.
Yeah.
Yes, there was. And then you went down to the woods then, to Esgus Llewellyn. And I think it was a relation of Penlan that lived in Caivelin.
You have got a good memory.
There was a story, I can't remember who the postman was then. Don't think it was John, no, it was the one before him. And going to Caivelin, and when he got to the door, he says, come on, so-and-so, hurry up, you've got a funeral to go to this afternoon. He'd been reading the
post.
Because the post used to go, but they didn't go down to the other valley, because that came come so.
Oh, God, believe you can imagine them, can't you? Walking all that
There was a chappy... He was from London, but he'd married a woman from Kemis Road. And he was working in the forestry. And I used to pass him, you see, coming over. He was working on his own brassing or something like that. And he used to say to me, what time is it, Miss Musgrove? 4:45. He said, damn, I haven't had my dinner yet. And he'd be all there on his own all day, you know, and he had no idea of time. Lovely old man.
And they'd leave him be?
Well, he'd just been put to brassing. They could trust him. I can't remember his name that. It was a lovely old man with the white whiskers. And he was saying, super damn man.
Well, how much wood was there in Esgeigleog then?
In Esgeigleog itself, it was all forestry. There was no timber. I don't know who owned the timber that Aberglesach, but it had been felled. And there was some on Penlan. There was a wood on Penlan that was felled. And there was another wood at the other side of Aberglesach, yeah. But there was some nice timber there, but the road, you couldn't walk on it, you know, it was all sludgy, so they didn't buy that. There was a house that side of the road, I can't remember who lived in it. There was two ladies lived in it, and they had two foster daughters.
There wasn't Pant Coch, was it?
Pant Coch, that could be, yeah. But I can't remember the name of the two ladies, Miss...
No help to them, sorry.
No. I can't remember the name. But I've got photographs of the two girls in Esgeigleog somewhere, you know. They used to come down to the valley and that.
Well, did they get the timber out from Tŷ Mawr that way on the tram line?
There was no tram line in my day. The timber, it was brought down. The road was there then. It was brought down by lorry.
And who was driving the lorry, Ike?
No, he was with the Forest Commission.
So who was driving your lorries then?
I'm trying to think. The tractor driver was Iain Maesboeth. I'm trying to think who drove the lorry. Oh, a Hugh Jones from Corris. Was his wife called Blanche?
Hughie Jones?
Yes. Is he still going? Yes, he was the lorry driver.
Oh, right. No, he died about 2 years back. But his daughter, Blanche.
Yeah, she was a school teacher.
Yeah, in Machynlleth.
Yeah, she was up at the top of Aberangeth or somewhere that way to start with.
Yeah. All right.
And they adopted a child, her Colin.
Yeah.
Yes.
Colin Reed's garage.
Is he?
Yes. He was there.
And, yes, Colin. And then they had a little girl of their own afterwards. But one of the daughters had married one of the Vaughans in Mahamseth and had leukemia, didn't she?
Yeah.
But Mrs. Jones wasn't from Corris. She wasn't well-speaking, was she?
No.
Yes, he was a lorry driver with us. And one of the mates was Norman Evans, who was a postman in Mahamseth afterwards. He was on there. And then latterly, towards the end of it, we had German prisoners of war.
Oh, did you?
Oh, yes.
Where were they staying then?
I'm pretty sure it was in Pennell. Because when we went to live in Llwyn Derwen, we were on the banks of the Dyfi, and there was a camp the other side. Because one Saturday, a chappie came across with a basket, and he's wanting to sell this basket, a German he was. And Dick said, no, I don't want a basket. I could do some work in the garden, no signs. And he said, indicated, and he went to the village and he must have sold the basket and he came back. And during that summer, the whole of that summer, he came every Saturday to our house because he could ford the river in the summer. And we used to save him a bit of chocolate. He'd have tea with us.
Well, what kind of camp was it then? Was it purpose-built?
Prisoner of war camp. I take it, I don't know. But I never actually saw the camp, but it was some... Sligwi was the other side, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, it was somewhere there. But they used to come and work in the woods. But you didn't have to supervise them because the officers just stood there and supervised them. And we had two, there were mates on the lorries, and there was an accident one time. I don't know if it was terrible serious, but we had to get, a statement. And the German that was on the lorry didn't have English. So I went up to the woods and asked if anybody could speak, could translate into English. And one of them came down and translated this man's statement into English. I also worked with Italian prisoners of war too.
Where were they then?
Well, they were in different farms, and they were tushing timber.
What do you mean?
Tushing, with the horses.
Right.
Working for Dan Butler, but they were living on farms.
Dan Butler is this chap from Kemys?
Kemys, that's right. That's the one. Yes, yeah.
Did he have a fleet of loads of horses or something?
Had all that we had. Yes, although. Towards the end, Dan Butler gave up and I went round the farms in the Pennell area because we were working in Pennell then. I wish I could remember the name of that farm. And one or two of them let their sons come. They were getting so much a day. Brought their own horses and touched the timber for us because it was money for them. I just went round the farms and asked, could anybody could spare it? Because Dan Butler packed it, gave up. I don't know why. He really wasn't feeding his horses properly or anything, but whether he went on to better things, I really don't know, because he did make something of himself. But went round the farms and got them. And this one Italian worked with me. And the first English he he learned was, boss, sit down, me, sit down. A little peasant he was from southern Italy somewhere, but I think he had a mental breakdown after a time.
How did they take, these Italians to a woman telling them what to do?
Well, I couldn't talk to him much, could I? They couldn't talk back. But they just got on with the work they had to do. I mean, the timber was there and it had to be brought down because the timber fallers wanted it out of the way to get some more.
Yeah. Were you also in charge of the timber fallers?
Well, I was doing all the clerical work. No, Edward Lloyd was the foreman. He was in charge. But, I was, yes, in that wood. Yes. And I used to go with the district officer to say now there was a... going into a new wood. The district officer would say... we'd come into the office and he'd say, I'm prepared to pay sixpence a cube, but I'd rather get it for fivepence. And then I'd go up and negotiate with him. It was exciting. And he'd say... fourpence, and the men say no way, we want sixpence, and then they compromise and make fivepence. So he really got his way in.
Who's the district officer then?
A chap called Porter Jones. He lived down in Cardiganshire somewhere,
and he'd come up every so often.
He'd come up every so often. Yes.
Did you work in Penperthog?
No, we'd no timber in Penperthog.
No timber.
No. No,
well, how did you separate your timber from the commission's timber?
Well, it was different altogether. We had nothing to do with that. We just had certain woods. But they weren't felling mature timber.
No.
They were growing more and felling the thinnings and that. Because at that time, they weren't great big trees as they got later on.
But so you were buying these?
The Board of Trade were going into woods. What happened previously, it really, the merchants had a very good time. They used to go into a farm and say, well, I'll have those trees, I'll give you so much for them, and I'll clear up afterwards. You can imagine it, can't you? So really and truly, it was a good thing for them because they were getting a fair price for the timber then. So then they were quite prepared to sell the timber. Esquerwethan was one of them, was in Tower.
Esquerwethan, yes. Pennell, yeah.
Yeah, and what's the one next door to it?
Esquerwethan's on your right-hand side.
Yes, it's on. It was next, on the same side. It was next to Esquerwethan. Well, I can see the man now, and he had one daughter. Now, those farms had belonged to an estate. Robert's Getlin. That's right, yeah.
Not Gyllellog.
Gyllellog, yeah.
But Robert's Gyllellog, is this family still there?
Yes, possibly. But and there was Parrys in Esquerwethan.
Not the same Parrys as were in Glanmerin and that, is it?
Not Glanmerin.
Not Glanmerin. Oh, Dafydd Parry. Glanfechan.
Yes, that's right. Possibly the fathers were brothers, but I'm not sure, because there was another one, the Meyer Parry, that built that big bungalow, wasn't it? Johnny Parry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think there was a relationship, but I don't know how close it was. And that had been an estate, and these farmers had got together and bought the farms, as they were. So all they got for the timber and that was profit.
So it was all right?
It was all right, yes, yes. But, I mean, they had a good price because it was good timber there. It really was. Yes, that's right, Gyllellog. I tell you, it does come in time, doesn't it? I thought Robert's only had the one daughter, but I mean, she may have married him.
Well, there was a son in Gyllellog about the same age as me, Meirion.
Mm.
And by now he's a father to children, but I don't know how many other children were there. I can't remember.
I thought he only had the one daughter. I can't remember.
And there was a chap working in Gyllellog, Sam Pennell, they called him.
I heard of Sam Pennell, but I didn't have anything to do with him. But yes, and it was. In Gyllellog, it was a stream there, and it was steep, steep side, both sides, and we were felling timber on the one side, so it was difficult. And then there was another place across the Pennell Road, Kevin Creeb, I think it was.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the timber there had been felled, and it was down in a dingle. And how to get this timber up was going to be a
problem.
You know, the old country folks had all the ideas. It was amazing. And we had a tractor with a winch on. But as soon as you tried to do it, the tractor would come up, so you couldn't do anything. So somebody came along with the idea, and they dug a trench about that long.
About how long is that? About
a yard, yes. Right. And about a yard deep and about a foot wide. Dug it down. And then they dug a little, in the middle of it, they just dug a little trench down. So what they did, they put a log, they put the wire from the tractor down this little one, put a log on the top, and the whole timber came up and nothing shifted. And it was so simple, wasn't it?
The old people had
the idea, yes, they had.
So you've got a tractor by now as well?
Oh, we had a tractor from the beginning. Caterpillar, they used to call it then. Yeah.
Who drove your Caterpillar then?
Well, Iain.
Iain Maes Poeth.
Yeah, he was one of the drivers, yes. Because once he hadn't emptied the fuel out and it froze, bust the... that shouldn't be on really, because that's naughty, I'm telling tale. Yes, we had, but this one was a one with a winch on the back. And another thing they had, they used to have trailers for loading timber on. And the trees weren't straight, I mean, they were all sorts of shape. But those men knew exactly how to put that timber on that. It was just like a frame, and it was just like a jigsaw. It was amazing the way they did. And one old chap, he said to me, when I first went, he said, when it's going to be cold, you're going to get cold weather, wear something woolen round your middle and you'll never feel the cold. And I had a woolen piece and never felt the cold.
What, you just...
Just a strip like that. Put it round with a safety pin. Never felt the cold. And the timber fellas, they would, if you went up to the talk to them, straight away, they'd bend down and pick the coat up and put it on. They never stood still without the coat on. And they always had a broad, broad leather belt here. I never heard any of them complain about back trouble. And you imagine a 7¼-pound axe all day.
Hard work, wasn't it?
Yeah. And we had some, they weren't from Esquigilog that way. We had some, I think they were from Llambrymyr that way. And they'd been down in South Wales, because there's nothing in North Wales then, and they went down to the mines. They were probably in the 30s, and the breathing was awful. It was sad to see them, and to see them getting up to the timber, you know, climbing up the things, could hardly breathe, only in the 30s. Now, they'd swing the axe all day because we're standing still, but it really, that gave me a different insight to mining then.
Mining? No.
Young people, and yet slate quarrying was worse for the chairs.
They didn't live long, really, did
no,
they?
No, they didn't. But these had come back home, you see, come back to the villages, young men with family.
It was hard work, you know.
It was hard. I mean, the Forestry Commission made a lot of difference to the valley, because there was nothing, only the quarries before.
Oh, it made a big difference.
It made a big difference, yes, it did.
I mean, you've been talking today about people employed. That I didn't know I'd ever worked in the forestry or, you know, border trade or whatever. The whole valley was involved.
Yes, because it got them out of the quarries. But Brycroft was working pretty well, and but I think the one above Abertabenny had closed then, for Rathcoyd, was it?
Yeah,
Rathcoyd, yes, that had closed.
You had Rathcoyd, you had Cymru up there. Mm. And you had Crain Coch, which was part of the Aberllyfini quarry.
Yeah,
the back, you know.
I did walk through there once, you know, and I once walked from Aberllyfini over to Aberangus.
Right, where the Bailey Bridges
were. The Bailey Bridges had just been built. That would be about 1950-51. When were they built?
About 1947.
Yeah. They'd been there a while, yes, yeah. They were nice bridges, those too.
Do you remember the gentlemen, the engineers and this, coming to work in the camp? Do you remember the forestry actually taking the camp
over?
Yeah,
the forestry took it over when the school went. They took the whole lot over. Mm. But did they amalgamate a few forests then for offices? I don't really know, because that was a big... Although there were living quarters there, weren't there?
Yeah.
Yes.
Because we lived in number...
Yes.
11, is yes. It?
Well, that must have been... Well, your mother married about 1950, did she? 52. Yeah, 1950. Yes. Well, they were quite new then, weren't they, when they went in? But the Forest Commission, I don't think the Forest Commission bought them until perhaps 47, 48. I may be wrong, don't quote me there. But it was after the school went. School went back after the war. And then the Forest Commission bought all those places.
Because they've put, by the looks of things, the forestry have pulled a few down.
Probably.
You know, to make the houses.
Yeah.
They pulled a few from old photographs that I've seen, you know.
And they made a village hall there, didn't they? Mm. Is it still there? Yeah. Don't think it's ever used, but they made a village hall. And they had offices there.
Mm. Yes. There, at the moment, I don't know if you remember, Mr. Lake...
Yeah.
Dennis Lake and Mrs. Lake lived there. And do you remember Tom Spinner?
Yeah. Well, Tom Spinner married Emma... Maya Morgan, that's right, yes. Well, he was working with me. That's how he came up to Mahanthlaith.
Well, Tom Spinner?
Yeah, he came up to work with me in the Board of Trade.
Oh, he wasn't in...
He might have gone into the forestry, but he worked with me.
What was he doing with you then?
I'm not sure whether he was a lorry driver or something, but he was... Yes, he worked with me. You're not... Oh, he's quoting you, is he? I was going to tell you something. Yes, Tom Spinner, yes, he worked.
Well, his son, Elwyn, is...
Yes, he only had the one son, didn't he?
And two daughters.
Oh, they're daughters as well, yes. Mm. Yes, Maya. She was their only child, wasn't she?
Well, Maya, mum and dad came to live in Bryn Mawr, didn't they? Do you remember them living in Bryn Mawr? Had you gone there?
Where's Bryn Mawr?
The bungalow above the camp. They came to live there.
Oh, I don't know.
There was other people living there. You've told me about other people living there at the time.
Bryn Mawr, yeah. Oh, I know, bungalow. Yes, yes. Well, that was Dick Morgan was there when I went there.
Oh, her mother and father came to live there.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Tom Spinney, he was a Cardiganshire bloke.
Ah, right, yeah.
Yes.
So he came up special to work for the Border Trade then?
Well, I don't know, but he was working, because he was, I think he was lodging right opposite the sawmills.
Down in Treowyne?
Treowyne, the first one, yes, that's right, yes.
What about now, like, Mary Morgan, she was working for the forestry.
She worked for the Forestry Commission. She had a little dog. And I was working up, it was before, there were two or three of us there then, before we all went. And she had this little dog, and we had a tarpaulin to shelter under, you know, it was raining. And she had this smelly dog. And it was so horrible. We kept throwing bits of our food out to get it out. When it came mealtime, we didn't have any food left. Oh, she was awful, she really was.
You had to work out in all conditions?
Oh, all conditions, yes, yeah. But I mean, if it was very wet, you didn't work out. You sheltered. Sometimes we were to shelter at, what's the first bungalow where Davy Pugh lived? Davy Jones.
Pantake.
They had some buildings there. I remember seeing the first of the Welsh rain there. That was very early on. There was a few of us. And it just drove and drove past us all day. We couldn't believe it.
You know, it's hard for me to imagine because, living where I am and everything. Yeah. But for somebody like you...
Yeah. I'd had a country childhood. I was born in Cumbria, and I'd had a country childhood. I knew what the country was like, but most of them didn't. And they'd come from very sheltered homes.
It was a shock to the system.
A shock to the system, it really was.
Did they expect women to fell and things like that as well?
I suppose so, but we didn't. We never did that because we weren't there long enough. That's all we did was the burning and that. I think possibly they might have got us out quick after that fire. I don't know much of that.
Well, I've had reports that fire lasted nearly a week.
Yes, well, it started on Saturday and it was about Monday before it got down to the village. It was a sight to see, you know, at night. It really was, the whole top of the mountain on fire.
And it was wartime as well, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah. Yes, yeah. But, I mean, I can't see... In all fairness, I can't see that there's anything more we could have done. We shouldn't have been burning. And I'm sure Charlie said we shouldn't have been burning. This was before this happened at all. But we did, we buried it. We had to dig stuff and bury it all. Because we couldn't put it out with water. There wasn't any.
No, I was going to ask you why you hadn't put it out.
There was no water. Oh. I mean, you'd had to walk right down the bottom and carry it up in buckets. Well, that would have been no use at all. No, there's no way you could do it.
So, where exactly were you?
Aberglesach. Aberglesach. There used to be a house there originally.
Yeah, Blaenglesach.
Blaenglesach. Now, that's underneath Eskalwyd, isn't it?
Yes.
If I remember
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Well, it was on that side there. But you were up the side. You weren't right on the roadside.
Right,
so you climbed up the side. So, there was no way for it to go, only up.
Well, it never went near Eskalwyd or back towards Tŷ Mawr then?
I don't think so. Well, there were people up, you know, with beaters all the time working on it. I didn't go up to the fire, so I'm not going to say it didn't, as far as I know, touch their places.
Oh, it must have been a shock for you, though.
I would think it went the other side of it, theirs, because you could see it very plainly from Corris.
You know, Corris people say that all of, because
from all the along the top, yes, yeah. So possibly, I don't know, thinking about it now, possibly it went beyond them. You see, with it being so dry, there was nothing you could do to stop it. I mean, it was a disaster. But you should be able to find in the press some good pictures, because it became national news. So if you go to the press, you should be able to find some pictures of it.
Oh, I bet it was in its day, though, wasn't it?
And everybody went up there, you know, and a lot of people got overtime over it. I know my husband went up, it wasn't my husband then, but he said in no way he was going to take money. He went up to try and help.
Well, all look, I suppose they were worried about their homes, yes, and everything, in case it did spread.
Yeah. Well, there was nothing, there weren't any homes up there.
What about Era Quarry? You know the quarry up above Esgagila?
Yes, yeah.
Well, there was no workings there.
There was no working there then. No, no. And I'll tell you what they did by there. Yes, there were, which I thought was an awful shame, an awful waste. It had been planted. There was must have been an oak plantation there originally. And they planted underneath it. And they ring-barked all the oak. And I thought that was absolute waste.
It's cruel, isn't it?
It was stupid. I mean, that was good oak timber. I suppose the idea was it was shade for the trees. And by the time they got up, the others would
they
be
would
dead.
They would have died.
But I don't remember that going on much longer after that. But that was by Iroquois there. Yes, because you used to go up there picking blackberries. And I tell you, top of Penland then.
Yeah.
Winberries.
Ah, yeah.
Used to go up there picking winberries, yes.
Well, the other side, on Ronvillain's side, after the fire, the following year, that whole side was mass of llys winberries.
Yeah. Bilberries, some call them, yeah.
And they called them Caillys. So you did a favour there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they were on Penland. Yeah, yes, and it must have gone more to the Corris side than if it didn't touch Escalwyd and didn't touch Tamar. So it must have gone. Of course, they were, when you think of it, they were three quarters up the way of the mountain before they started, weren't they? They had their farming land underneath, didn't they?
Yeah. Well, all that now, we see, is planted, isn't it?
Yes, yeah.
There's no farming land up there at all.
No. I think Tim Mauer became some sort of a school, bought it for an outward bound sort of thing.
Yeah, you're right.
I don't know what's on Penland now, no idea.
At one time, the leader of the Scouts
it. The Baden Powell family, yes, yeah. Well, I don't know if it's Baden Powell, but the leader of the Scouts. Mm. Yes, yes, it did.
No, you're right, the Baden Powell.
Yes. Mm. Now, what about the Escalwyd then?
That's now a private residence.
Is it? Oh, so it's still going then?
It's still going. Yeah. There's a few acres around it.
Yeah.
Tŷ Mawr, there's no land around it. But it's a private home now. Pantaig's a private home. They've all been sold off.
Sold off,
you know.
Yeah. Well, I suppose Maespoeth and all those were sold on.
Maespoeth and all the forestry of Holden.
I rather think the left-hand side of the road was planted before the Penland side. I don't know. Up on the Darren. Now, by where you get off the bus at Escagilog, there were some fields there. Now, that was a nursery. We were growing young trees and that there. That was a nursery there.
At the corner.
Yeah, that's
Yeah. Do you remember a nursery? Oh, no, you wouldn't. It was after your time in the camp itself, but we're going a few years beyond now, where the swings and things were. And Tanner Coed.
Those are the wooden houses, aren't
they? Do you remember them being built?
Oh, yes, I remember them being built, yes.
About when was that?
Oh, I wouldn't like to say. I did go there once. Edward Lloyd went to live there. The ones from Acker Cottage, and then that was made into one house. Now, it was prior to 1950, because I'll tell you what, our Gwilym was a plaster with John Evans and Sam. And when those houses were finished, our Tom went and swept them out. And our Tom died in 1950.
Right. Okay.
Dick's brother.
Right.
He died in 1950. And I think William was plastering on them then.
So it wasn't long after the war then?
It wasn't long after the war like that, no. No, it wasn't. You see, and Taisa at the bottom, There were four houses there.
Right.
There was Louis Morris's mother. Then there was Christmas Jones. She was a daughter of Mrs. Edwards that lived on top of the hill. And then there was Idwell Jones, a brother to this one. And then there was Roberts, you know, Elvira, whatever you call her, Guinera's mother.
They lived there.
And the bottom one went down to the river, became dangerous.
What, it just collapsed in?
Collapsed into the river, yes. The one where Morris was. But I think they'd got out beforehand. But that's only one house now. Acker Cottage is only one house.
Yeah, Mr. and Mrs. Woodvine lived there. I don't know who's there now.
I think he's died, as I say, something.
Mm, and she has.
Yes, yeah. Yes. There was one family. And there was one woman left alone on Acker Cottages. Now, the one Thaisa looked rather well done, you know, but Acker Cottages to me was an absolute mishmash when I went into it. It was just four cottages and you walked from one to the other. It wasn't. You know, it wasn't very nicely done. Somebody from Oxford had that, I think.
Oh. Wait, did your husband, or Gwilym, fall off the bridge?
My husband?
Your husband, off the railway bridge.
They're going across?
Yeah.
That blighted his life, that did. That's why he didn't go to university, so he had to. He went to the choir. Because he never fell asleep at night without falling over that bridge. And he'd jump, and I'd used to say, "It's all right, love." And then he'd drift into sleep. But that happened the whole of his life. He never could drive a car because his nerves were shattered.
How old was he?
About 15 then. Oh, yes, it really was. And you see, he lost a year in school, and then his health wasn't good enough. He went into the Welsh Guards, but he had to come out. His health wasn't good enough. He made just on 71 or something.
It was high, wasn't it? Yeah.
Well, he was cycling across. There were no sides to it. He was cycling across. And he didn't go down into the river. He went down into the stones.
Oh.
And he had... His teeth were up here. And he had to have them out without anaesthetic. And he had a scar here. And he was, you know, when his teeth came right through. And the doctor, he was in the little cottage hospital, you know where it is now?
Yes.
Opposite the church,
yeah.
That's where he was. And the doctor
yes,
said,
opposite the, yeah,
that's
down
right.
There.
And the doctor said, I could have done a better job, but I was only tidying you up for your coffee. Because he was unconscious for 3 weeks.
Good God.
He'd gone to do an errand for somebody. Just went across to take something to the station, I think. And by the way, you're not doing now, are you?
No.
Dick was in Abertlemeny office in 1952, and the bridge went down in 1948 across the river, and
the railway bridge
for the little line.
Yeah.
And there was a chap called Campbell Thomas. I happened to be in the office that day. A chap called Campbell Toffees, and he came into the office to tell us about it. And he said, we'll see that you get them down, and they were going to do containers. That's the first I'd ever heard of containers. Because what they used to do, they used to bring down the little line and then transfer them onto the big line.
What, bring what down now?
The slate.
Oh, right, yeah. And then they transfer them and...
They transfer them onto the, from the... They used to come down in the little bogies, you know, from the... And then transfer them, but they couldn't get them across then.
Okay.
Now, what happened, I suppose they did do that, but, I mean, Dick left Abertlemeny office. Well, I don't know, but I remember Campbell Thomas coming into the office and saying about it, and saying, don't worry, we will get your slate there. I don't know whether anybody's told you that or not.
Who's Campbell Thomas, then?
He was head of the railway or something, wasn't he?
Excuse me here, who's Campbell Thomas?
Station master.
At where?
Oh. He was station master, was it? I remember him coming up to the office, after many office, and saying that they would see that they got the stuff.
Alright. Sad day, though.
It was a sad day. And not long before that, do you remember the Joneses that lived at Freeth Gate? He was a clerk in the station in Mahantlath, I think. And they belonged to Capel Seasnag in Mahantlath. And they were coming home from the chapel, And the girl fell in the river and was drowned.
Oh, the...
I can't remember her name. There was one of them still in my hands. They were very clever children there. Because I suppose you could walk over it, but there would be slats in between, wouldn't there? I never walked over it, but...
No. Now, can I go back? You were talking about a gentleman that came to Ysgugeilog and was going to do a lot of work there.
Pixton.
Mr. Pixton.
I think that's his name, Pixton. I don't know. That was before my time, mind you. He'd not long left. But he lost his money, I think. Well, cotton slumped, didn't it, from time to time.
What was he hoping to do in Ysgugeilog then?
I really don't know. That, you know, as you go up the hill.
Yeah. Which hill?
From the bottom of Ysgugeilog up to Toparu.
Right.
There's
yeah.
the place on the side, and Nora had a shop there at some time. Yeah. It was there, I think, he was going to work. Now, what he was going to do, I really don't know. But he was going to change, and he did make work some work. Because I have an idea that our Edgar went and looked after his horses for a little while when he first left school. Our Edgar was born in 1910, so that would be about 1920.
Where did he live in Ysgugeilog then?
He didn't. He lived in that big house on the way to Corris, on the old road.
Over on Villain?
Yeah, he lived there. Because Dick was friendly with Nelson Johnson. And there was a do on at Bron Villain, and Dick was invited to go with Nelson. And Dick says he remembers Johnson Burke, as they call the father, saying, "Now remember, talk Welsh to Dick. Don't let him feel left out." He was a Scotsman then. Dick went to this do at Bron Villain with her. And that was as a young child, I suppose.
How did your Welsh come along?
Well, they used to talk to me in Welsh and I'd answer in English, but I used to make a lot of faux pas. Although after coming here, we had a Welsh service once a month. I used to go to that. I suppose I know quite a lot, but not enough. Should have known more. But
how often did you come home? Because I realise your mother is still alive now, yeah. at the age of 103. Mm-hmm. How often, after you went to Kainos, Ysgugeilog, how often did you go home?
I think you had a week's leave in a year, and you went home Christmas and Easter, I think. Didn't go home very often.
Were you homesick?
I don't ever remember being terribly homesick. I suppose I would be, because, I mean, I was the eldest of six kids, you see, so...
Because it was like going to another country in a way, with the language and
everything.
Well,
it was. It was. I mean, I can't think of anybody in the village that then... I mean, there must be lots now that spoke only English. I can't think of anybody.
Were they good days?
Well, the past is always good, isn't it? Oh, yes, I loved the hills. Used to walk the hills a lot. I loved the job. I loved the wildlife, you know, used to see things up there that you... I remember one time trying to... Well, I perhaps did save it, you know, a lamb that had got cord round its neck and having a go at that. I could see it was in distress. Yes, it rained a lot. Yes, I suppose I did like it. Then I met my husband there, so that was...
Yeah. Yes. Well, how many were working for you when it came to an end before it went?
Actually, when it was time for me to finish, I had the chance of doing a census on German timber. But I'd got married then, so I didn't go.
German timber?
Yeah, the timber in Germany, because, you know, Germany was devastated after the war. I had the chance of going to Germany for a year.
You didn't come across Polish?
No, no Poles.
Oh, there's talk about Poles in Ysgugeilog, and I haven't been
able... I don't remember any Poles. Don't remember any Poles whatsoever. I mean, I don't remember Germans or Italians, although, what's the farm... Llewyn Gwen.
Yeah.
I think they had an Italian working for them. I'm pretty sure they did. Because I remember going there once, and Mrs. Williams, I think she was, wasn't she? Ned Williams, was he called? Or one of the Williams?
Yeah, it was Williams, yes.
And she was walking about putting things in a pan, and she says, you know, I can't cook the normal things for him. So what she was cooking, I don't know. But it looked ghastly. She lived to be a very old lady, didn't she? Yes, I'm pretty sure they... But that was on the farm, that wasn't.
But yeah, she was about 100, wasn't she?
Oh, yeah, she was over 100, yeah. Mm. She died in the cottage hospital. Mm. They left her there for years, didn't they? Like a nursing home.
I can't know. Did you ever go up Pamperthog and Cwmcadian and that way?
Not working, but I walked up there, because I walked up there a lot. Now, there's a place up there... It's empty now, and it was two farms, and one had married into the other, and there's one of them empty. Now, I rather think that Morgan that married, what's its mother, was daughter, was something, was he the son of one, I don't know. The son of one married the daughter of the other, and there's a farm up there.
Not Havoti.
Havoti. Could be.
A Havoti is just a bit further on from Pamperthog Farm. You had a girl from Pamperthog Farm. I don't know if she was working with you. Rowena?
Rowena, yes. Yes, the Williams sisters. Good-looking girls. One of them married a Thomas Baker in Mahantlan. Kynwen, the young one.
Oh, is that who that is?
Yeah. And then one of them married Dyer Skin.
Who had the garage?
Yes. And then there was the one that married that Alan.
Susie?
Yeah, she lived in the Gashun afterwards.
Was she one of them, was she?
Yes. And then there was another one that I think she died with TB, I'm not sure.
And their father was in the forestry?
I think he was, yes. Mm. Yeah. I remember the mother too. I remember old John Avellin's mother. She must have been about 100. She lived in the house where that Gwynira went to live.
Oh, in Pamperthog,
In Pamperthog. Hmm. Old Mrs. Jones.
All right, yes. No, I can only think of Havoti up there. I can't think of any other.
Well, what's the other one, the big one? Then that was still a farm. Begins with M. My mother-in-law was a... Before she went to London, she was in service there. I think that's probably where she met her husband.
In Pamperthog?
It's up above Pamperthog. It's the biggest place.
Not on the Esgair side?
On the Esgair side, yes. Well, I don't know, but it's up above there. And it's quite a big farm. It was quite a big farm. A big sheep farm.
Is it under forestry now, is it?
It's all under the forestry now, isn't it? But, I mean, it was being farmed as a farm. I remember. I can't remember the name of the man either. He just had the one daughter. Up towards the Darren, somewhere up that way.
Beginning with M.
I think it begins with M, but I'm not sure.
No.
Can't remember the name of it. If Dick was here, he'd tell you it all. Yes, it's somewhere towards that way up. A boisterous big man.
Not Cwmcadian, you mean?
Cwmcadian, that's right.
The horse.
That's right. Yeah.
Jones.
Jones Cwmcadian, that's right, yeah. Well, I think my mother-in-law worked there. She was a twin. And then she went to nurse in Barts in London. So she had good English. But my father-in-law, he died just before I went there. And I don't think he ever did speak English. Don't think he could. And Tom, the eldest one, was a bit sticky on his English. You know, he used to... come out with odd things, but apart from that, I don't know anybody else that.
Alright.
Spoken English.
Well, is there anything else you would like to say to me?
Well, anything you want to know.
I think we've done pretty well, haven't we?
I'm trying to think. No, I can't think of anything else.
Well, as I say, I'd like to come back to you.
Okay.
And I can only just thank you very much and thank you for your time. Thank you very much.
Oh, do you want to look at any pictures now?